This is the Michael Medved Show.
And another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth, but not necessarily a great day in the Middle East. The United Nothing voted last night for 14-1, one abstention. That would be the United States of America. The Security Council voted to impose an immediate ceasefire on both the Israelis and the Hamas terrorists. The Hamas terrorists rejected the ceasefire completely, which, of course, many people in the press are missing. The statement of Hamas official Rafat Moura, speaking from Lebanon, was, "The ceasefire does not serve our interests nor that of the people of Palestine. It does not take into account the aspirations and the principal objectives of the Palestinian people." So what are those principal objectives? And aside from the ongoing struggle with Israel, what about the similarly or maybe even more deadly and ugly struggle going on among Palestinians? Nobody better to talk to about that than the guy who wrote the book. The book is called Hamas versus Fatah, The Struggle for Palestine. The author is Jonathan Shanzer. Jonathan is a counterterrorism expert. He served as counterterrorism analyst for the Office of Intelligence and Analysis at the Department of Treasury. And he also has been a research fellow at the Washington Institute for Near East Policy. Jonathan, great to talk to you.
Great to be on the show, Michael.
Okay, what about this statement from the Hamas representative in Lebanon that the ceasefire doesn't take into account the principal objectives of the Palestinian people? What does he mean by the principal objectives of the Palestinian people?
I think it's pretty clear that the principal objectives of the Palestinian people is the destruction of the state of Israel, and that's why we're in this mess to begin with. The rocket fire, the suicide bombings over the years have all been designed to do one thing, and that is to inflict harm upon Israel. And this is, I think, the main reason why any ceasefire, I don't care who brokers it, will almost certainly fail. Hamas exists for one reason, and you can find it in its charter. It's actually just posted online in English in many sites, and that is the destruction of the Zionist entity. And that's the ultimate goal. So I think that no matter what's brokered, Hamas will ultimately break it again.
1-800-955-1776 is our phone number. So neither side is going to pay attention to the call from the United Nothing for a ceasefire. What happens next?
This continues, I think, until either Israel decides that the international pressure is too much or it reaches its military objectives, which would be essentially to break the back of Hamas in Gaza. The only question that I have is, what would Israel do once Hamas is broken? In other words, who will fill the vacuum? In my opinion, there aren't very many terrific candidates right now in the territories who can fill that vacuum and again govern Gaza in a way that Israel would be pleased with.
And that's one of the fascinating things about your book. And by the way, we're going to post your book, Hamas versus Fatah, post it on our website so that people who want more background on what is going on with the Palestinian people and these warring terrorist groups can actually find it. A lot of folks believe that this is sort of like the old cartoons, the Chuck Jones Warner Brothers cartoons, where you have an angel on one side and a devil on the other side whispering into the ear. And Hamas is clearly the devil. I mean, these are crazy, suicidal, destructive, bloodthirsty people. And a lot of Americans believe that on the other side, Fatah is that these people are saintly and peace-loving and kind, and they want to work together with Israelis. Your book indicates that that might be a little bit idealized as a view of Fatah.
It certainly is. It's a simplistic way of looking at things that I think the State Department here in Washington would like us to believe. In other words, the United States has been working with Fatah, but that doesn't mean that it's the right choice. It just means it's perhaps the lesser of the two evils, but they're both pretty bad. If you look at the history of Fatah, it was created by Yasser Arafat, who we all know made his name in the world as a terrorist. Fatah was known for really one thing, and that was for, you know, hijackings and bombings throughout the 1950s, 60s, 70s, and 80s. It wasn't until the 1990s that Fatah agreed to engage in a peace process with Israel, but we all know how that ended up. Fatah decided to wage war against Israel yet again in the year 2000, and I think really showed its true colors. Today, the Fatah organization is really a house divided. There are factions that truly do seek peace with Israel, but I think they're minority factions. If you look, again, at the charter of Fatah, similarly, in the similar way that you would look at the Fatah, at the Hamas charter, rather, you'll see they say the same thing, that both organizations seek the destruction of the State of Israel. Both organizations have terrorist backgrounds. So you're really looking at two sides of the same coin.
If you were advising President Obama, there were press reports, and the Obama campaign has not denied them, that they are thinking about, and when they come into office, they may well negotiate directly with Hamas. Do you think that's a good idea?
Absolutely not. I think it really delivers a terrible message, and that is that, you know, if you're a terrorist organization and you can inflict harm upon civilians, well, we'll invite you to the negotiating table. We'll allow you to sit down with the greatest nation on earth and to talk. This is the exact wrong message. I think it will only encourage other terrorist groups, either in the Palestinian territories or terrorist organizations around the world, to step up their campaigns of violence in the hopes that they'll be able to sit down with the United States.
What is it exactly we would offer to Hamas? What would we promise them, or what would we try to get them to do?
Well, as I understand it, this idea is about saying to Hamas, if you cease fire with Israel, we'll sit down with you. But the problem is that you need a fundamental change on the part of Hamas. In other words, Hamas could use a ceasefire the way they did over the last 6 months as a tactical means to regroup, to get stronger, to prepare for the next war.
To smuggle in Grad rockets in those underground tunnels.
Exactly right. So in other words, it doesn't matter how long of a ceasefire it is. You know that their ultimate objective is to destroy the State of Israel and to engage in hostilities yet again. So I have a hard time understanding what this new office would do, this new initiative of perhaps talking with Hamas.
Let's go to Zachary in Riverside, California. Zachary, you're on the Michael Medved Show with Jonathan Shanzer, the author of Hamas versus Fatah.
Yes, it's a pleasure to speak with you, Jonathan and Michael. How you do today?
Great to talk to you, Zachary.
The main point I want to bring up is how Israel and the United States totally undermined the democratic process that took place in the Gaza Strip by not recognizing Hamas when the Palestinians voted them in, because everyone knows that Fatah was totally corrupted and Hamas was basically seen as a less corrupt entity. And despite what they had done in the past, the United States and Israel should have said, okay, you know, we're going to wash our hands of the situation in the past, and now that you guys are the governing, the governing entity of Gaza Strip, we're going to basically treat you as a government. But that's not what we did at all. We started to pressure the Palestinian people. I remember Condoleezza Rice came on TV and said the Palestinians have chosen a terrorist group and have chosen to go against the peace process. That was the Palestinians' choice, and they should not have been punished. For the last 2 years, they've been under economic sanctions by Israel. People barely get to eat. People barely have food and water. And it's Israel's basic responsibility, being that they are the democracy in the area, and I don't think they're taking responsibility. So I believe that it's Israel that doesn't want to bring this to a close, because Israel does not want to give up land in Israel, because they want that to be their total homeland. And it doesn't help that we have evangelical Christian Zionists that lead the fight in our country, as well as their Israeli predecessors. So what do you have to say about that?
Jonathan?
Oh, it's a fair question. To be sure, the election that took place in January 2006 was probably the freest and fairest of all elections that took place in the Middle East. That doesn't mean that Israel needs to accept the people who are elected
That's where the problem comes in. Since Israel's seen as the big brother, they're seen as the dominant party, they should have had taken a bigger role. It's like, okay, you know, we know that you guys have messed up in the past, but we're coming to tell the world that since the Palestinians have elected Hamas, we're going to work with Hamas and do whatever we can to make their transition
smooth. How do you work with an organization, Zachary, that is pledged in its charter and that says repeatedly that our purpose, our raison d'etre, our reason for being, is to destroy you?
Honestly, that's pretty dysfunctional, and everyone knows that their charter is. So we need to look past the dysfunctionality of their charter and speak on, you know, real human terms. Everyone knows that, you know, the United States and the world is not going to let Israel get, you know, blown off the map.
Let me give you a little sample of what happened after Hamas was elected to power. First of all, the Fatah organization, primarily was the Fatah organization that refused to work with it. They refused to create a unity government exactly for the same reason that Israel didn't want to work with it. It feared that it was going to draw the entire region into a conflict. And what we can see, actually, is coming out of Gaza in the year 2006, there were no less than 946 rockets. that were fired by the Hamas organization.
Okay, Zachary, hold on. I want you to stay with us. And Jonathan, I hope you'll stay with us. I want to continue this conversation. And Zachary, my basic question for you is, you say that you think there is some kind of secret Israeli plan to take all the land. Why then did Israel give up all the land in Gaza and forcibly remove its own citizens who had been living there for 30 years? We'll be right back with Zachary in Riverside and with Jonathan Shanzer, author of Hamas versus Fatah.
The Michael Medved studio lines are sponsored by GoToMeeting.com. Do more. Travel less. GoToMeeting.com. MedVid Studio is sponsored by the franchisees of Mathnasium Learning Center, teaching kids math the way that makes sense to them. To request parent or franchise information, call 877-MATH-411.
Sometimes it happens this way. A book comes out, and then events come forward that make the book indispensable. That was true for Jonathan Shanzer. His book, his most recent book, is called Hamas versus Fatah, The Struggle for Palestine. And of course, with the ongoing struggle right now in Gaza, his book has become indispensable. Previously, he wrote Al-Qaeda's Armies, Middle East Affiliate Groups and the Next Generation of Terror. He is an expert on counterterror who has worked in the past for the Treasury Department Office of Intelligence and Analysis. Zachary in Riverside believes that Israel is really responsible for some of the misdeeds and horrors of Hamas. Okay, Zachary, I'd posed a question right before the break, and I'm wondering if you'll respond to that, and then we'll hear from Jonathan Shanzer in just a moment. The question was this. You said that you believe that Israel secretly covets the land in Gaza and has
Of course they do, of course.
Okay, but isn't it logical, if you've occupied this land, and Israel had for 38 years, right? They had occupied the land for 38 years. They had 9,000 settlers who had lived there, who had very prosperous and successful farms and homes. They built synagogues. They had cemeteries there. All of it forcibly removed. If you actually want to continue to own that land, why did they remove their own settlers? Why did they give it up?
It's pretty easy to answer. Not everyone in Israel is a religious zealot, just like not everyone in Palestine is a religious zealot. You have people that have common sense, and common sense tells you just can't keep this land indefinitely when it's so hotly disputed. I'm a Muslim American. I grew up as a Christian, so I basically know exactly, you know, what Christians think. I had a lot of Jewish friends when I was young. I know what Jews think. And I know that they are not, you know, intent on giving up any of that space, because they need that, you know, so Jesus can come back and establish his kingdom on earth. So when you have religious people thinking in that mind frame, Zachary, not Gaza.
Gaza's not part, was not part of the, at least they're parts of Gaza. We're never part of the ancient Israelite
basically,
kingdom.
Christians and Jews feel that, religious zealots feel that they need all that for Christians and Jews. And I'm sure that they're
Jonathan
probably
Shanzer, is that
by,
true?
I'm listening to this, and it's a little bit difficult to swallow.
How is that? It's in the Bible.
The main reason why Israel occupied Gaza in the first place was because you had warring factions that were essentially trying to close in on the Israeli army in 1948. And as a matter of fact, the Egyptians were able to actually occupy it from 48 until 67. During the 1967 war, Israel took it back from Egypt, in essentially a defensive war, and held on to it as a bargaining chip, and it was always a political bargaining chip. The hope was always to give back this territory in exchange for peace.
Okay, John.
Let me just finish, Zachary. Israel decided in 2005 to vacate this under the leadership of Ariel Sharon, who is widely seen as one of the more right-wing politicians in Israeli history. He did this in a gesture of goodwill, hoping that the Palestinians would be able to create a model or what a state might look like in the future. Israel handed over infrastructure. It handed over the entire territory, no strings attached. The Palestinians single-handedly destroyed everything that the Israelis handed them in the process. There were incredible greenhouses with incredible technology that the Palestinians destroyed rather than using to create their own industry.
Why would they? They should
have. And they
have
used that territory. Zachary, let me just finish. They have used that territory to fire 7,000 rockets on Israel over the last couple of years. This is something that, in other words, they could have taken this and turned it into a vibrant Palestinian territory. Instead, what they have done is turned it into a Taliban-like state, which has invited Israel to go in because of the aggressive acts that they've been carrying out against Israel over the years. I can understand the frustration from somebody, in the United States who would like to see a Palestinian state develop, but Hamas, Zachary, will never be your answer. You need to see more moderate factions come in and begin to take control of these territories if you're ever going to see them develop into a Palestinian state.
Okay, last word, Zachary.
Okay, basically, I've already stated, how I felt about what happened with Hamas and Israel. So let me make my last statement. This is a total failure of the Bush government. He's been in power 8 years, and he has done totally nothing to subside the violence in Israel. And so I see this
is it you expected President Bush to do?
Stick with his guns. Didn't he say that he was going to bring this to a halt? He said he was going to donate a lot of his time in office to solving the Israeli-Palestinian problem.
What is it other than trying to get the two parties to negotiate and have a meaningful
agreement? No way, Michael. I don't think he's done even that.
Condoleezza Rice has traveled to the Middle East more often than any Secretary of State ever.
Michael, it takes the president. We're talking about
the most highly contested place in the world. But Zachary, this is the point. What is it he could have done differently?
Anything, Michael.
Okay, that's specific enough, Zachary.
Thanks.
Appreciate your call very much. Let's go to Dan in Phoenix. You're on the Medved Show with Jonathan Chanzer.
Hello,
is this Dan?
Yeah.
Okay, Dan, go ahead.
No, this isn't Dan.
Oh, okay, well, hold on just one moment. We'll come right back to you. Brian in Seattle. Brian, you're on the Michael Medved Show. Hey.
Well, Happy New Year to you, one and all. Your author, I think, is right on the mark, up and down the line, with one major exception. He used a phrase that betrays, I think, a misunderstanding of the whole shebang, and that is, he said the next war. Well, there's no next war. It's the same war since 1948, May 14th, I guess. Here's the thing. I think actually Hamas is right. I'm sympathetic with Israel, but I think Hamas is right. They're pursuing their aims. If I was advising them, Michael, I would be telling them probably to be a little more ruthless, not because I'm a bloodthirsty guy, but because I understand asymmetrical warfare. Israel, of course, is doing the right thing, but they're in a no-win situation. I don't think this situation is soluble or solvable. I do think it is intractable, and I think that, by the way, all of this is related to the same reason I've been complaining about your position for years. I've been calling you soft on Islam and the war on terrorism, and this is why.
Okay, Jonathan, is he right that the situation is completely intractable?
Well, it's not completely intractable. Brian, I think you're right that this is an extension of the May 1948 war. This has been going on for 60-plus years now because of one simple reason, and that is that the Arab world, the Muslim world, simply refuses to accept the existence of the State of Israel. That's how you boil this down to its essence. As far as this not being, a war that can end, that's where I would disagree. Wars end with victory, and I believe that Israel still has it within it to do this. It simply needs to find the resolve in order to break the back of Hamas and to break the back of terrorist organizations that seek its destruction.
Okay, and so I'm going to ask you when we come back, Jonathan Chanzer. He's the author of the book Hamas versus Fatah. I'm going to ask you when we come back, what would victory look like? People use that term, and of course, victory is indispensable. You shouldn't never fight war without the intention of actually winning the war. So what would an Israeli win require, and is that achievable? We'll be right back with Jonathan Chanzer.
Michael Mitt.
Ehud Olmert, the Prime Minister of Israel, the outgoing Prime Minister of Israel, who has some of the same popularity in Israel that Rod Blagojevich seems to have in the state of Illinois, and for some of the same reasons, did speak and said that the UN resolution is not practical? Well, given the fact that it's already been totally rejected by Hamas and that they've already violated the calls for the ceasefire by firing 25 more rockets into Israel, including two Grad rockets that hit Ashkelon. Thank God nobody was harmed or injured. Yes, I think you could say it's not practical. 1-800-955-1776. Speaking with Jonathan Schanzer, he is an expert on Palestinian politics. Palestinian politics, and which you write about in your book, Hamas versus Fatah, is often quite literally a blood sport, is it not?
It absolutely is. For the last 20 years, the Palestinians have been at each other's throats. I think it's really unfortunate that the Western media has largely ignored this. They've ignored it because I think the media is so intently focused on the Arab-Israeli conflict. It's a much easier conflict to cover. It's one that you understand, you know, two religions squaring off over a small piece of land with biblical and religious significance. But in fact, over the last 20 years, Hamas and Fatah, the two largest factions of the Palestinian territories, have been wrangling with each other both politically and militarily, culminating in a civil war that broke out in 2007. And what's actually interesting about this is that during that war, there were about 350 Palestinians who were killed in this violence, and about 4,000 people who were injured. People were getting pushed off of tall buildings. People were being shot point blank in the arms and the legs to ensure permanent disability. And there was just not a peep out of the media.
I know that one of the things, and this is fascinating, is one of the things, I was just looking at this, the first intifada, the one that broke out in 87, thank you. The very first intifada, the first so-called Palestinian rebellion, there were more Palestinians, or almost as many Palestinians who died with Palestinians killing each other as were killed in struggle with Israelis, right?
That's absolutely correct. You know, Palestinians were looking for collaborators. They were going around killing people who they believed were working with Israel. And as a result, people were being strung up on light poles and being burned in their homes alive because of the suspicion of working with Israel. So this is not, you know, neither of these territories is a terrific place to live or even visit. But in terms of the wrangling that takes place between the Palestinian factions, it can be quite bloody.
What's victory look like if Israel must pursue victory?
Well, you know, victory can come on many levels, but essentially it means breaking the will of your enemy for Israel. It means having the Palestinians and perhaps the Iranians and the Saudis understand that they cannot win this conflict. I think that Egypt and Jordan have reached those conclusions, and that's why you see peace agreements with them. I can't say they're the warmest peace agreements I've ever seen, but they are. They've lost the taste for battle with Israel. And this is essentially what we would hope for with the Palestinians and with some of Israel's other enemies.
Okay, let's try something on you, because I don't know if you saw Edward Luttwak's piece today in the Wall Street Journal, Jonathan, but Edward Luttwak, who's a very, very smart defense analyst, says, wait a minute, if you look at this war, it suggests that Israel really did win the 2006 war with Hezbollah, because Hezbollah seems to be very, very eager this time to avoid joining into this conflict.
Absolutely.
That indicates that they know they cannot win against Israel. What do you say?
Well, I think that Hezbollah paid a very heavy political price in 2006. You know, they may have been able to claim some sort of, you know, wins here and there in terms of not having been utterly defeated. But if you looked around Lebanon after that war ended, I mean, Beirut was a parking lot. Part of the Bekaa Valley was a parking lot. And the Lebanese people were furious at Hezbollah for drawing Lebanon into this conflict. Hezbollah knows that if they draw Lebanon into this conflict again, they will essentially be asked to leave. They will be dismantled from within. It is too risky for them politically to do this. And I think that the hope is that the Palestinian people will feel the same way when this conflict draws to a close, when the Israelis determine that they've achieved their objectives. The last thing that Palestinians are going to want to let happen again is for Hamas to fire rockets.
All right, so the goal is not to drive Palestinians from their homes. The goal is not to reoccupy Gaza. The goal is to close the smuggling tunnels and to stop the rocket fire. Achievable? We'll come back with Jonathan Schanzer and your calls.
The Michael Medved Show. Medvet Studio Lines are sponsored by GoToMeeting.com. Online meetings made easy. GoToMeeting.com.
44 minutes after the hour on the Michael Medved Show, joined by Jonathan Shanzer to talk about the recent ceasefire that the United Nations and another typical UN triumph has mandated for the warring parties in the Middle East, with very, very different war aims. The Hamas, as a terrorist organization, wants to continue the violence. Hamas has never said they want peace. They don't want peace. They want Israel gone, and they want violence until that happens. Israel wants quiet, and it wants a halt to the smuggling of extraordinarily dangerous weapons into the terrorist enclave known as the Gaza Strip. We're speaking with Jonathan Shanzer. He is the author of an important new book, particularly relevant to the current struggle. It is called Hamas versus Fatah. Jonathan, the chances of Israel actually eradicating Hamas or deposing Hamas and helping to install a more Fatah sympathetic government in Gaza, is that a real possibility?
Well, Israel's done it before. If you look at the war between the PLO and Israel in the 1980s in Lebanon, Israel was able to kick the PLO out of Lebanon, was able to oust Yasser Arafat, who was exiled to Tunisia, where he spent the next almost a decade. It's possible that this could happen. You're looking at a different or kind of an organization, Islamic fundamentalist organization, that seeks martyrdom, that seeks death, and is not afraid to to die in battle. So I think you're looking at a bloodier battle, but I still believe that it's quite possible to break the back of Hamas through targeted assassinations and through the dismantling of its leadership structure to the point that it would be without leadership at all, at which point they wouldn't know who to turn to, and that's how essentially Hamas could fall apart. The problem is, what does Israel do from there? And this is something that I tried to look at in my book. The problem is, installing Fatah back into the Gaza Strip, even though it was once the leader there, if Israel does it, it will be seen as something like an artificial heart. There would be probably a good 50-50 chance of it being rejected as something that's not organic. In other words, because it's something that Israel wants, it would automatically be viewed by the Palestinian people as something that would not be good for the Gaza population.
Let's go to Jason in Detroit. Jason, you're on the Michael Medved Show with Jonathan Shanzer.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. I've got a couple of things. I just tuned in, and I heard a couple of callers before. The guy was going on about some stuff, and it was two things that I don't hear enough. One, the Palestinians have a state. It's called Jordan, where they came from, before the King Hussein drove them out. And two, how can anybody negotiate with somebody whose every utterance is, I'm going to kill you? Do you offer them a hand 1 week, a foot the other, so they can slowly cut you to pieces? You can't. Somebody
right,
puts a gun in your face, you can't negotiate with that.
Jonathan Shanzer.
Well, Jason, you raise a couple of good points. Historically, you could say that Jordan is Palestine. Although I think that the successive Israeli governments have been negotiating over the West Bank and Gaza, so that's what's on the table. And I think that regardless of what we think or anyone else thinks, the fact that the Israeli government continues to talk about these territories as eventual Palestinian states, well, we've got to talk to the Israeli government about backtracking from there if we think that that's, the way that things should go. Now, in terms of the way that the Palestinians talk, it's really important to note this, and it can't be stressed enough, that if you look again at the charters of the two organizations, the two most popular organizations inside the territories, both Hamas and Fatah, both of them state very clearly that they seek the destruction of the state of Israel.
Weren't they supposed to change the PLO charter, the Fatah charter, because of Oslo?
They did change the PLO charter, but they didn't. And this was the catch. They never changed the Fatah charter. So in other words, Fatah is the cornerstone of the PLO. So if you change the umbrella organization's charter, but all the people who staff it, they still haven't changed that charter.
Let's go to Ryan, Chicago. You're on the Michael Medved Show with Jonathan Shanzer.
Hello, Michael. I'm a long-time fan and a first-time caller. The previous caller actually kind of beat me to the punch, but I was looking at this idea as Jordan being the Palestinian state as maybe a viable solution to the dissolution of any Arab leadership in Palestine with the possible collapse of Hamas and Fatah. Well, and I wondered if you and your guest might agree with that.
Well, I think the problem, Jonathan, wouldn't the main problem be that King Abdullah II of Jordan, he should live and be well, has no interest in accepting several million new Palestinian citizens of Jordan?
That is exactly the problem. And in fact, if you look at Jordan right now, it's already 60 to 70% Palestinian. This is a state that could be teetering on collapse. Every time there is a state of unrest in the region, the Palestinians of Jordan, begin to get antsy, and there is a question of whether the Jordanian state can keep it together. The idea of allowing another, let's say, million or 2 million or 3 million Palestinians into this territory is something that I'm sure Abdullah would not be interested in doing. It would no longer be the Hashemite Kingdom of Jordan. It would be called the Palestinian Kingdom of Jordan.
Let's go to Rob in Sheldon, Washington. You're on the Michael Medved Show with Jonathan Schanzer.
Thanks, Mike. First-time caller. I'm a little nervous to talk to you here. I enjoy your show.
Thank you very much. Go ahead.
I don't think that this is a solvable problem, and you had mentioned the first intifada. And I'll use the second intifada as my proof. The Dome of the Rock being built on top of the Temple Mount will never be solved, and so there will always be problems. I mean, Ariel Sharon shows up there and starts a whole second intifada by just being there.
And by the way, doesn't even go into the Dome of the Rock, that famous walk-by. He just walked by the front door. He didn't even go inside.
They're never going to be able to solve that. I mean, all the other stuff is kind of noise, you know, compared to that the big end game there, and that's just unsolvable.
In Jerusalem, okay, is it truly unsolvable? And if so, what's the best you can hope for? We'll get an answer from Jonathan Schanzer and more of your calls. He's the author of the book, Hamas versus Fatah. And if you want to find out the true nature of who these people are who are fighting and in the news right now in Hamas, you should get hold of this book. We'll be right back. Michael Medved Show, speaking with Jonathan Schanzer. He is the author of the new book, Hamas versus Fatah, which came out just shortly before this current conflict in the Middle East. He's also the author of another new release. He is the father of newborn baby boys, three of them. At one time, and these are your first kids, right, Jonathan?
Yes, they are.
Well, congratulations to you and your wife doing well.
Yes, thank you.
Good, thank God. Let's go to Bryce in Colorado Springs, Colorado. You're on the Medved Show.
Yes, hi, Michael. Hi, Jonathan.
Hi there.
Because of the complexity and the long war that's gone on and so forth, I have a little bit of a unique idea. Not saying they have all the details worked out, but this is where creative people would come in on this, but to have all three religions come together and create an international park out of this area in which, of course, anyone would be able to live and so forth. You could, do a lot of different things with it, but be a statement to the world saying we are going to show that we can live in peace.
Bryce, I can tell you in one word why your proposal, very beautiful proposal, would never work. You know what the word is?
What's that?
Islam.
That would require an uprising within Islam to truly seek peace, and if most of the people do, this could be one of those rallying points to say, look, the world wants to live in peace with us. Why are we allowing these fanatics to
destroy our religion? Mention something to you, and this is really important for you to know. When Israel made peace with Jordan, there was an island in the Jordan River, which is what separates Israel from Jordanian territory. And they called it Peace Island, and it was it was run by the Jordanian army, right? Isn't that right, Jonathan?
Yep.
And they had a group of Israeli schoolgirls. They were little girls, 9, 10 years old, who went out to Peace Island to bring flowers and, celebrate peace. It was your idea. And this was a park, basically, just as you're saying. Jonathan, you remember what happened on Peace Island?
No, but you can refresh everyone's memory.
What happened on Peace Island is one of the Jordanian army soldiers who was there got very religious one day and took out a submachine gun, and he started shooting the little girls and killed four of them. And the late King Hussein, his memory should be a blessing, And this made a deep impression on the Israeli public. The king himself went publicly to the mourning for each of these little Israeli girls, and he cried, and he held the hands, and he apologized for what a soldier in his army had done. It was a beautiful gesture by King Hussein, but unfortunately there aren't not everyone in the Islamic world is on that level. Not everybody in the American world is on the level of Jonathan Shanzer. He's one of the people who understands and knows about the struggle within the Palestinian community, which could be an even more decisive and ugly struggle than the struggle between Israelis and Palestinians. His book, Hamas versus Fatah, worth the attention of this greatest nation on God's green earth.